Hello, Tink. Nathan, thank you very much for joining our show. Hi, Peter. Welcome to our podcast.
Hi, Tink. Best greets to Texas. And I'm happy that you join our talk. And I'm sure we can hear a lot of interesting stories.
Yeah, you missed all the good stuff.
Yeah.
Why?
We started without you.
Yeah. I will ask you again. Don't worry. We had a little time because Peter was not ready today, so we started directly a little conversation. Yeah. But every conversation with Tink is simply interesting because he has so much to tell.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that's
yeah.
amazing. Yeah. So I think, and Tink, if you wouldn't mind, I think we will invite you way more often because what you know and the stories you have, this is simply beyond imagination.
Yeah.
Well, the best thing about my stories is they're all true.
Yeah, of course.
That I don't have to ever tell a lie or make up a story, you know.
For what you had such a fulfilled life. Why should you? You know, this is no need for it.
And I think Armin don't knows huntermen and fishermen never lie.
Fishermen lie.
Fishermen lie. Yeah. You know this joke with the guy who came in the night, in the evening in the bar. I got a caught a fish that big. Next evening, I got a fish that big.
Yeah.
And then I said, "Listen, we tie his hands because he's always lying." And I caught a fish had such big eyes.
Yeah.
We know these jokes. Yeah. Fishermen, but a hunter never lies.
So I think, would you mind tell us how you got into archery and bow hunting? And
yes, I got a bow and I lived in Heidelberg from the army. It was a wooden York bow and target arrows. And I used to shoot a big white tree in my yard. And I did that a couple of times and enjoyed that. I broke the tips off, so some of the arrows were footed and the target points off. And where I lived in Heidelberg was near the airport, and every day a Army Piper Cub would take off and fly right over the roof of our house, okay? So I decided one day I would get my bow and I would wait for that plane. And when the plane came by, I pulled about that big and shot, and I hit the plane there in the wing, and the plane flew off. And I said, "Oh hell, I've lost an arrow," you know. And about an hour later, my father shows up with a constabulary, four MPs with machine guns, and they want to see my bow and the arrow. And I told them I hadn't seen that bow in a long time.
Yeah.
And my fireman, who was a Pole, he was a POW, he went up and got my bow. And man, did I get in trouble, you know, for shooting a U.S. Army airplane.
Yeah.
So my dad took my bow.
So you hit the plane? You hit the plane? Yeah, or did
the arrow stuck in the wing and it flew away.
Wow.
And he was just 6 years old, remember.
Wow.
My dad took my bow away until I moved to Florida in 1949, and there weren't any airplanes around, so I couldn't shoot.
I have bad audio. You too?
It's a little crispy, yeah, but it's fine.
Maybe think you if you go a little away from the microphone, it's better. I don't know.
Okay,
it's better, I think. Okay, sorry. Go on.
Yeah. So then you were in Florida, 49.
Yeah, and I hunted rabbits and turtles and so forth. And then actually I got a trip to Texas where I actually got to go into an archery shop called Gassman's Archery in San Antonio. I was able to buy broadheads, and I went out to Texas and lost every arrow that I had shooting at rabbits.
Yeah.
And I had to stop shooting because I had no arrows, you know? And came back to Washington. And I wanted to go deer hunting. and my father wasn't a bow hunter. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really know any other bow hunters. This was back in 56. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote the outdoor sports editor of the paper, mm-hmm. and told him I wanted to go hunting, and would somebody take me hunting? Three different guys volunteered to take me hunting. And they took me to different places. One in Southern Virginia, where we jumped a big buck. And, you know, in those days, we just walked around the woods with an arrow on the string. We didn't know anything about stands or blinds or anything like that. You know, we just were looking for a deer, you know, and mm-hmm. we'd kick them up. The deer would run off 50 meters in front of us, and we wouldn't see them, you know. And the second fella mm-hmm. took me up to a place. He had a cabin in Fort Royal, Virginia, and he had stands. Mm-hmm. They were pretty good stands. I got to hunt. And then you took them. And in West Virginia, there were lots and lots of deer. So it's like a magic line. You draw a line between Virginia, and it's crowded and populated. And over the line of West Virginia, there's nobody there. Mm-hmm. And I would walk the fields, and I'd see deer grazing out in the field, and I'd get my bow, and I'd, you know, make an 80-yard, 100, 120-yard shot. And, of course, I never hit anything, you know. But I got to say, I had seven shots today, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
The finally, they got me a wooden box that Scotch came in. Mm-hmm. And they said, hey, you sit on this. And they took little tree limbs and built me a little blind, you know. Mm-hmm. And I got some shots at some deer. Mm-hmm. And then many years later, I went back to the same farm, and I killed my first deer with a bow. Mm-hmm. And I shot a deer up there. And then I just shot a deer the other day, dated 1971. And it was the first deer that I had shot with a compound. It was a Jennings compound. The serial number was 486. I still have it. And I showed Ruth the picture of the hair, and I had lots of hair. Now I don't have any hair.
Oh, you still have a lot of hair, yeah.
Yeah. And
they fell gravity, you know, they fell a little down.
Yeah. Well, it's actually gray. When I was in South Africa, I played Santa Claus mm-hmm. in the mall. I had these little kids come and sit in my lap and pee in me and everything, you know. Mm. December is the hottest month in South Africa.
Mm-hmm. And think what was your profession, or how did you went on? You told us about in Germany you were a little child.
I was an army dependent. My dad was a major in the army. And I was a dependent. And my school I went to was in Frankfurt when I lived in Bad Homburg. And later on, I went to Heidelberg.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Mm-hmm. And I learned to speak German. Most of my family in America on both sides was German. When I came back, they couldn't understand what I was saying. They said I high German, and they spoke low German.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I understand them. They could understand.
Like slang German. Yeah. No? And think, as far as I know, you hunted a lot, I don't know, but at least you shot an elephant in Africa with an Oneida eagle bow.
I shot three elephants, yeah.
Three elephants. Wow.
I was 24 when I went on my first safari. And I had a wife and two kids, and I had bought a house, and somehow the house was on a dividing line, and they said I couldn't have the house. So they gave my money back that I bought for the house, and I took the money, and I was in 1966.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Wasn't that about around 66 or so in this mm-hmm. time when another famous Texan named Bill Negley went to Africa to shoot the Big Five?
Yes, I knew Bill Negley. He gave me an award at Safari Club one time, and he came from a very good family.
Yeah, very rich and, guy. No.
Yeah, but I beat him. Swinehart was one of the first guys to help him. And Swinehart was quite an ambitious guy. And,
yeah.
And he used to run around with Howard Hill mm-hmm. and so forth.
And it was a kind of competition between Swinehart and Bill Negley, as far as I know, no?
Yeah, and Bill Negley told me one time he got this elephant permit, and he went all the way over to Africa, and he said, well, the game department's not going to give you a bow hunting permit, so he had to go in that particular elephant hunt. He had to do with a gun because the game department didn't want bow hunter messing around with elephants and everything. Mm-hmm. But he eventually got one, and we became friends. Mm-hmm. And his bow is in the
Buckhorn Saloon in San Antonio. I know about
it. The Buckhorn Museum. Yeah, and Negley was quite a colorful guy, and I met some of his family later on. And Negley was a real guy. He was the real McCoy. Mm-hmm.
I read his book, and it seemed very honest written. In my opinion, in my impression, he wrote it how it was. Of course, we all know hunters tell their own story, but it's very interesting how his book is. It's a wonderful book, Archer in Africa.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, when I went on my last elephant hunt, my professional hunter was the one that had guided Negley.
Oh.
And he was a friend by the name of Francois Bay, and he'd been he'd been in the French army, and then he'd been a game warden, and he really knew his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And when I made my film, which not around anymore, but it showed me shooting two Cape buffalo and an elephant, and it showed all the gory details.
Wow. Up to
the flesh and elephant side, everything. And
you don't have it anymore, the movie?
Nine.
Oh.
I made 4,000 copies when I moved to Texas, and other things, and a few old timers like Jerry Hill that won a copy. And the last elephant I shot with the Jerry Hill brought it, which we make again, which is
nice
a copy of the Howard Hill head.
Yep.
And I sent a last copy to him, and he's going to put it on Facebook.
But I have to say, for the quality, always Jerry Hills were a lot better than the original Howard Hills, in my opinion.
Yeah, Howard always had somebody else make them for him. But as long as they're sharp, they'll do the job, you know?
Yeah.
Back, I have, hand me those arrows in the corner. I collect broadheads. I have a big broadhead collection. I don't know where it is right now. But somebody gave me some mirrors the other day. And I don't know if you can see here.
Ooh. Wow.
But one of them is a little shaver, too. It's got razor blades.
Wow.
The chick razor blades went in.
Interesting.
Yeah. This was A3.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about the old errors is I have a number of old errors.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knew the value of a sharp broadhead.
Mm-hmm.
And Howard used to sharpen his heads, but people would go to the store and they'd buy a dozen errors with black diamonds on them, or Botkins or Hillbreeze or something. And they'd just take my clear with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know they had to be sharp, mm-hmm. you know.
Hair on you. Able to shave, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And now, in the last 5 years, they've done amazing things with broadheads. They have sharpeners that come with broadheads.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they have single bevel broadheads,
mm-hmm.
which do work very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so broadheads are now coming of age. The, mm-hmm. the broadheads have always been in the back seat of the car for a long time. It was just something you stuck on the front of the air, you know.
Yeah.
But now broadheads are getting more modern. They come from Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And different places, and they've put quality into the steel, quality into the design. Today, you can buy a sharp broadhead and hunt with it, you know.
Yeah, out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
Because you said single bevel, I always liked that Apes Grizzly, you know, that single bevel Grizzly broadheads, that old ones. From Abe.
I don't think I've ever done it with a Grizzly broadhead before.
Huh.
I don't know that.
Mm-hmm. And
I imagine what you get in Europe is pretty much leftovers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to import stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I see a broadhead collection in back of you.
Yes, I have some. In the 1990s, when I started, I was in contact with American collectors, and so we interchanged some. And I don't collect them anymore, but I have some. Mm. I like them.
Yeah, there's still some people people in the sport collect them, but I have the ones that I want, and. In fact, I'm in a trunk, and they're not on display. I don't have a room in my house to show them anymore.
And I think, as far as I see, you always used compound bows and Oneida bows, but not so-called traditional bows?
No, that's wrong. I started out with traditional bows. And the first bow that I deer hunted with was a polar bear. It was 49, which was a straight bow, mm-hmm. long bow. And then that was in the 50s. And then I got a Damon Howitt hunter mm-hmm. bow.
A very nice
and
bow.
Howitt bows were really great bows. They had great workmanship.
Still available.
They were the first bows that were really center shot, you know, mm-hmm. and that you plug rest on one and just go to town with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I, in 1971, Jennings came out with the compound bow,
mm-hmm.
and I switched to the compound bow. I was first guy in here that, you know, a lot of people had never pulled a compound. They didn't know how they worked. They didn't know. And so I was kind of a pioneer in my group that I had had a compound bow. And not until Jennings came out with the two-wheeler, the model that just had two wheels on the end and didn't have all the other stuff. That's when the combo took off. But you know, there has never been a single deer ever killed by a bow. Do you know that?
No.
They're all killed by arrows.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true.
Okay. All a bow does is it throws the arrow down.
It's always the arrow.
You know, we used to shoot traditional bows. You shot out to 30 feet per second. 135. And yeah, we killed deer, you know. And, you know, because a lot of deer dumped and ducked under the arrows and everything like that. But
I don't know if, I don't know if it's true, but that Mr. Allen, who invented the compound bow, I read about, he invented the compound bow because he wanted the deer ducked with his recurve bow. They dodged down. And so he wanted a faster bow so the arrow could get faster to the deer so they couldn't duck the string slap.
Our deer in America have springs in their legs. And when they go down and then they pop up like that. But I have a video of me shooting Cape Buffalo broadside in Africa and jumped the string.
Wow. He ducked.
I shoot heavy, slow arrows, you know, full of kinetic energy and
what
speed is that?
You used aluminum arrows for this hunting?
For the elephant safari, I used a Eastern made a fish arrow that was a 2440. And aluminum fish arrows would bend, and you know, fish is flopping around and bend your arrow. So I got a bunch of fish arrows, and that's what I used to shoot my last two buffalo and the last elephant with.
And they were, the shafts were also heavier than the usual Eastern aluminum, no?
Yeah, they were very heavy. If it's important, I can show you one.
If you have one,
it's not too far away. If it's in hand, feel free.
I'll be right back. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Great.
Excuse me.
Master Ovi. What took you so long today, huh?
I had a visitor, and he was about 50 minutes before 7, and so.
I heard now all the good stories already about his arrow building and when he switched to 4-fletched arrows instead of 3-fletched and they fly way better.
He's an old fox.
Yeah. He has a lot of knowledge, of course, obviously. I mean, he shoots since 74 years.
But the sound is so bad again.
Yeah, sometimes it's a little, what can you do?
Yeah.
Let's be happy that we still have internet, you know?
When
Klaus Schwab finishes his next stupid, don't have internet and electricity for a while. So.
But I don't know what's the cause. Is it because the microphone is bad or the connection is bad?
I think the connection is bad. Sometimes simply it's not the microphone, because you hear sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad. So if the microphone would be bad, it would be always bad.
It's
now he's gone.
Or a bad place maybe where he's sitting.
Nice, simply.
That's nice,
He's as it is. We understand.
That are some stories, no?
Yeah, he has stories, when you get him started, then he's over.
But the
good thing is his long-term memory is still up to date, like nothing. Every day, and it was in December 46. And I would not even know which century it was, but he remembers that. But he said he's short in memory. He doesn't know where he left his glasses and what the name of his last girlfriend was. So yeah, but it's right.
He had some trouble with his last girlfriend. I think she.
Oh, there he is, the Mr. Arrow man.
Oh yeah,
the legend. Look at him. And can you believe Tink turns 80 next month? And he doesn't look like, huh?
Tink, sir, you know that I'm in the Tink Nathan fan club.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was at a show.
Yes, you gave it to me. In 2011.
This is a Joe Cadwell hat who made their Howard Hill for his safaris. And they weigh 460 grains.
Oui.
He lightened them.
Only the tip.
And this. I don't know how far back I have to get to show you the error. A 5/16 fiberglass fish error.
Yeah. Big feathers.
And maybe you can see the head.
Yeah.
And that's the design that Howard Hill made. Well, made him for him. And he made this for Swinehart. When he went up, Swinehart was the first guy to take the big five with a bow.
Okay.
Yeah.
This was the exact head they used.
Wow.
You can see it had been here where they had the air hole and so forth.
That's quite the collector's head, I'd say.
But I had last time a question of one of my viewers. They said when you have a broadhead with cutouts in it, they can make some noise which the animal can hear. Is it
like
this? Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a Jerry Hill head.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry Hill had, he had two rivets in it.
Yeah.
He had one here and one here.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which was an improvement over the Howard Hill. Mm-hmm. It just had one rivet in it.
I think, could you hold the Howard Hill elephant head near to aside this one so we can see the size difference?
About the same size.
A bit higher, like this. Bit longer,
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
160 grain,
Thank you.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's some impact. That's some wood in the air.
Some dead striking force on the way here.
I used to make Tink Starfly low profile veins. Nobody in the industry would make low profile but high veins. And these 3/8 of an inch. We made it for a number of years.
Yeah.
Four flights. And this goes back to 1966. Jagged, but this was the air I used in Mozambique in 1966 to shoot my first couple elephants.
I think Fred Bear was in Mozambique too for hunting buffalo and elephant, no? Around the same time, no?
Yeah, I was friends with Fred Bear. I was lucky. He kind of put up. And we used to talk on the phone a whole lot. And actually, I used to work for the National Rifle Association in Washington. And we had a bow hunting committee. And Fred was on the committee. And I was the secretary, so I was Fred's boss. He would come to meetings and in our building, which was used to be downtown, it's out in the country now. And we'd spend a day in meetings talking about how to promote bow hunting. And bow hunting didn't come along naturally. We had to work at it to get legalized and get it accepted. It's a question of ethics. People thought a deer would run around with 100 arrows sticking at him. A popular myth with the anti-bow hunters of the time. And the building was downside. I lived in a town called McLean, Virginia. is about 2 miles away, and I get home for dinner, sit down, the phone to ring. It's Fred. And I said, "Hi, Fred." He said, "You want to have dinner with me?" And I said, "Sure." So I turn around, drive back downtown. He was in a hotel next to the NRA, and he didn't have anybody. He didn't know anybody. The people of the different groups were scattered and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one time at the Pope and Young meeting, it was held in Boulder, Colorado, or Denver, Colorado, at the Brown Hotel. All these bow hunters that had shot animals and entered them into the record book were there, and they were shaking hands. Mm-hmm. And Fred immediately go and start telling him about myself. He says, "Tell me about that deer you got." And he would turn the conversation around. So the guy would be talking about himself, and it'd get Fred out of a pinch, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we were at this Pope and Young convention, and you'll see pictures of Mary and James and the astronaut Joel Engel and me at the Pope and Young meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred asked me to sit at the head table. I said, "Fred, I'm nobody. I'm not even a regular member. I'm an associate member." He says, "I don't know anything." So he asked me to sit at that table. So I sat at the head table with all these dignitaries, and everybody thought I was somebody important. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was just writing for Bow Hunter magazine.
Yeah. They, because you said the astronaut, as far as I know, the astronauts took one of Fred Bear's Razorhead broadheads out to space. So Fred right. Bear had the broadhead who flew the farthest of any broadhead around, because they took one broadhead out in the space.
Yeah, it was Joe Engel, and he got into some trouble for it. Joe Engel became a major general, which is 2-star,
mm-hmm.
and he was an astronaut and a hero, but you know, he got to a certain age, so he wanted to keep flying.
Mm-hmm.
And he flew F-4s and Tomcats and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the Air Force, you know, "You're finished, you're too old." So he went and joined the National Guard, and they made him a 3-star general, because the states can make generals that are not
mm-hmm.
you know, federal. And he got to fly until he got too old to fly. Mm-hmm. Joel was a good guy. He's the one that carried the broadhead and the space had to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he got disciplined for it.
Because he took the broadhead with him, he got disciplined.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Not part of the crew equipment satellite and
mm-hmm.
causing damage and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. And some of the, I don't know if you guys know over there, but Fred Bear used to put black diamonds on his arrows that he sold before he came out with the razor head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Swiki. Where's Swiki? Nope.
They call them, now there's a wiki, but the trade name was Black Diamond.
Yep.
And it's made by John and Cliff Swiki. They're both dead now. I knew both of them. They were father and son.
Mm-hmm.
And they made broadheads all the way back until the 30s.
Yep.
And when Fred, he went to Detroit, he got a job on the assembly line, assembling Ford and Mercury motor cars.
He did some kind of tapestry for the cars or so, I read. No? Some kind of...
I
think so.
I think
he started with making quivers and braces at first, as far as I read.
Yeah, and he went and started making bows. And he got a very famous boyer by the name of Neil Hunley.
Nelson Grumley.
I have a Grumley bow, and it's just very, and underneath it, Neil's Grumley.
Yeah.
And I thousands of dollars by one a couple of years ago.
These were self bows. These were wooden bows. Yeah.
And then used to take and a friend of mine who was Dr. Pinkermuth, who was president of the NRA, he bought a bow and targets and everything, but Fred would lay up the round targets along the highway, and people would stop by and they'd see the targets and they'd start talking about bows, and they'd buy a bow and they'd buy a bunch of arrows, and they bought a round target to take home. And that's not written anywhere. That's information that's been passed on to me by a guy that bought there. And Fred had been a guest in my house several times, and I was a guest in his house in Grayling, Michigan. I met his wife, Henrietta, and my father was at Selfridge Air Force Base in Michigan, about 4 hours from Grayling. So I read, and he said, come on up. And so I said, I'll be up there on Christmas Eve and everything. So I showed up, and Fred had forgotten all about it, okay? So I got a tour of the plant, which was closed that day, and I saw the Bear Razorhead machine, clang, 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 and they were dropping down through a die, and it bent, they would fall off on the floor, and they couldn't be sold. And I said, what do you do with this pile of old broadheads? It says, I'll melt them down, you know? And so later I had Christmas Eve lunch with Fred and his wife, Henrietta. And then that afternoon, Fred drove a Mercury station wagon because he worked for Ford, and Mercury was a higher model of the Ford. And we took gift baskets all around town to his employees, which had turkeys in them and stuff like that. Nice. And that's how I spent Christmas Eve with Fred Bear.
Wow, wow. Nice story, nice story.
It's all true.
So we're really proud to have you here to tell us these fabulous stories.
I wish I was in Deutschland. I enjoyed Germany very much. Made a lot of friends, and it was a really good time of my life, you know.
Yes, you wouldn't know if you know Armin, but for usually the Germans are nice people.
Only not me.
Except Armin.
Did you ever come back to Germany later when you left after war?
I'm sorry?
Did you ever come
back? I didn't have a camera. I was a kid. And the pictures are in my father's photos that my sister has. My younger son, pictures of my childhood.
But you never, later on in your life, you never went back to Germany again?
Oh, yeah. I went back to the IWA show in Nuremberg every year.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And when I was running the thing, it was called Safari Land Hunting, after the safaris I did. And there was another company that made leather goods. Called Safari, and we coexisted, and I used to go to the IWA show, and I had an American girl who was born in Germany, and she was my interpreter. We would go to this hotel in Nuremberg and take the hot baths there, and steam baths and everything. It was
look at his smile. Yeah.
Old cat.
Yeah.
We do this broadcast weekly, and so we have one weekly feature. We ask for the knife of the week. So we would be really
look at him.
We would really love if you show us your favorite knife and tell us something about it.
Yeah.
Well, this is a Randall knife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is world. And this particular model, called the Fighter. And this knife was issued in World War II.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And in Vietnam to the pilots, okay?
Oh.
And a sharp edge on the top.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a fold. Okay. Cuts up. I don't know how I have to, where
great,
I have to put it.
Great knife. Yeah, like great saying. Knife.
That's just, I think, a random.
Yeah. As far as I heard, also the astronauts in space had a Randall knife.
I have one in the safe.
Mm-hmm.
Made the knives for the astronauts. And they have, yeah. And I bought one of those.
Wow.
I didn't bring
my
entire collection out. But I bought Tyndall Randalls.
Mm-hmm.
And to tell you the truth, it's a shame to take this out and use it in the field, okay? And I don't know if you can see this. You can see the knife.
It's not.
Can you see it? Okay.
Yeah, it's not too big. No, it's a nice knife.
Just nice, yeah.
It's got a curve in the handle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And got a finger grip here.
Mm-hmm.
You can grab kumsa.
Yeah.
For fighting.
Yeah.
You know. See.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. These Randalls are a very famous knife in the United States.
Yeah.
Yep.
And this one has the original papers inside. And the Randall is worth more if it's never been used.
And I mean, just look on the sheath, how well made that sheath is, strong,
incredible craftsmanship, yeah.
Yeah.
It's got a stone, so you can sharpen it in the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. Wow, nice.
Very nice. Very
back
nice.
It says, I have to get.
Where did you leave your glasses, huh?
Randall Knife, Orlando, Florida.
Uh-huh.
Randall Made Knives, Orlando, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the back.
Nice, very nice.
Beautiful. How much would it be? How much would it cost?
It depends. There's a 5-year wait at the factory. When you get it 5 years from now. And if you order and pay and wait that time, it might be $600.
Mm-hmm. Not
but
too much.
People buy them, dealers, and they put orders in, and that's the way I was able to get this one. So it probably cost $1, maybe $1,300, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Nice knife.
Wow.
I mean, what's yours?
No, today I only have my small one, which I have every day with me. It's a small everyday carry.
Oh, Armin.
Yeah, I can't compete now with these big ones. Nice, sleek.
Yeah.
This
I have a little everyday knives here.
Yeah, has a nice hollow grind here, and it's a Kube knife. It's really nice, you know. It has a really deep clip, so you can really put it in your pocket, and it's flips open nicely. So I like the sound of it. This is my everyday. Yeah. It's not very expensive. It's, I don't know, $80, $90, $100 or something. But it's small, lightweight for every day in my pocket. When I have opening boxes and stuff.
Okay. You boys are really good guys. I'm going to teach you something about knitting that's written in any book, okay?
Tell us.
I've learned this from several guys, okay? And they don't put it in any book. The secret is don't let the guys see the knife until it's in them.
Mm.
Okay. Don't let them. Don't go waving it in front of them like this.
Never.
Okay. No. Thing is, you hold it behind, and stick him in the heart, and then he'll go down.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah.
That's the secret of knife fighting.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know the difference between a hunting knife and a fighting knife?
Maybe the size.
It's what you stick it into.
Yeah. Once I saw from the police in the United States, from the cops, and they simulated a knife attack. The guy had the knife here open, and he ran toward the cop. And if the guy is closer than 7 or 8 steps or paces or meters, the cop hadn't any chance to pull his gun.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he ran against this cop with the knife, the cop has no chance.
Yep.
Right. And that's why American cops are taught to shoot to kill. If a guy is throwing a knife on, he's liable to kill his wife or his girlfriend something like that. And
there was shortly ago, there was this incident when a girl stepped his friends and the cop shot the girl. And they said, oh, this innocent girl, he shot that girl. But I have seen the video. It was horrible.
Well, knives have killed more people than guns.
Of course, yeah. Of course.
Back to the Middle Ages, the swords, the dirks and everything.
Mm-hmm. You know, here around, we have big trouble with refugees from Afghanistan and Chechenian and so on, and they are all knife men, so we have a lot of crime with knives here around.
I thought Germany was authorizing people to have guns now.
No, you know what? Think in Germany and in Austria, we are living in a kind of communism. You are nothing is allowed. The government protects you, so you don't need a gun, you don't need anything.
Yeah,
it's horrible here around.
Protects you. Yeah.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah.
I have one knife
mm-hmm.
today. It's an Australian knife made by Dave Keeble of Queensland, Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it back in the 1990s, and it's a wonderful knife.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's just a nice size for hunting knife.
Yeah, it's a drop point.
Yeah, it's drop point and a nice, nice strong blade.
Okay, you can send it to me and it'll be okay.
Okay, and it's a kind of fake ivory. It's a kind of you know, artificial ivory.
Well, but my card.
I had so many knives with stag handle and wooden handle, so I needed something different, and I really like that one. It's nice sheath too.
Nice. You
know? Yeah, very nice made.
Pretty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty knife.
Nice. So, knife of the week.
Knife of the week.
Yeah.
And
I thought this was an archery and bow hunting show.
Yeah. But you know, every archer has a knife with him, so... Hmm?
Every
bow hunter has a knife with him.
You know what the nice thing is, think, because we are just talking, we talk about everything. We talk a little about politics, we talk a little about hunting, about knives, about archery, about adventures. And we have one more feature. We always ask our guest what is his favorite conspiracy theory, or is there a special conspiracy theory in Texas?
Well, yes, there are theories. What's happening in the States is that Biden won the election, but he had Democratic people at all the voting places, and they are doing audits in the different states. And when they do the audits, they count the ballots by hand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They found there was 100,000 ballots that came from.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it turns out they were printed in China.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And now you figure the odds of 100,000 ballots, not one was for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
What are the odds? 100,000 to 1. And the different states. We have 50 states. They're doing audits, and they're getting outside companies to do the audits.
They're not letting the
county and city people. They're bringing in consulting firms.
Mm-hmm. And they found boxes full of ballots aside the street or so. I was up in election night. I followed all this, you know, till 2 o'clock at night. Trump was winning, and then suddenly all this Biden ballots came out. So yeah. But I fear that's not a conspiracy.
That's not a conspiracy in the theory, no.
That's not a theory.
A fact.
Biden said he'd been the U.S. Senate 150 years.
Mm. Yeah, he's a crazy guy.
And then he said the other day that he had his ass wiped.
Yeah.
Yes. Sniff, he was, it's so horrible. You know, and the mainstream media don't bring it up. He's sniffing on girls' hairs and so on. I saw the pictures. I saw the movies.
We saw the videos there when he stands behind girlies and touching them and whatever. It's such a creepy bastard. Yeah.
And you know, Tink, I have to tell you one thing. In the German and Austrian media, you had not one positive headline about Trump.
No.
Not one. He was an evil guy. He was a racist. He was everything you can imagine was Trump.
Mm.
And that's why I started to follow this stuff. And now I found out.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Please. They've seen you before, so come on.
I'm in front of the camera. We want to see you.
Okay.
Yes. Hello.
Hi. Hi.
You need to tell us something?
Ruth has worked for my ranch for 9.5 years.
Wow.
So she must have a very thick skin to bear with you.
That's right. No,
yeah. But you wouldn't like to have it any other way either. So
we always thought that slavery is over in Texas.
Yeah. Officially, yes.
You guys know that the Civil War was not about slavery.
I know.
Of course not.
No.
It was not, no. It was called the War of Northern Aggression. The Northern people wanted the South very rich, and they wanted that for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so after the war was over,
mm-hmm.
continued to pillage the South.
Mm-hmm.
They did so up until the 1880s, and it's a big disgrace on America now.
Mm-hmm.
I have to ask you. Shortly ago, I read about very interesting stuff. You say it was about the North wanting to grasp the South, but on the other hand, and I'm sure this is true, there was a kind of order, the Knights of the Golden Circle. You know about? Do research. Yeah. It's very interesting. The Knights of the Golden Circle, they were kind of Freemasons, kind of, but not Freemasons. And they had the plan to make the southern states, including Cuba, Haiti, and some of the South American upper states, northern states. And if you drew a circle around, they had a map with this circle. And they wanted to make these agriculture states with slavery. And they were very, this guy Pike, who was a founder of the Freemasons too, and so on, was involved. Very interesting story. And they're still hunting for treasures, for gold they buried, because when they lost the war and they had a lot of money. Very interesting. You never heard about?
There's lots of buried treasure around.
Yeah.
Lots of gold has been stolen.
Mm. Yeah.
and never recovered. You know, there's lots of buried gold around if you know where to look for it, you know.
Yeah.
Most of the gold that's been found has been found in ships in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And there's they're coming up with lots and lots of gold down there.
I also wanted to ask you about the El Amo, because that's the real Texan story. And you know, I love to read about Texas. James A. Michener's book, Texas. It's a whole story of Texas. It's very interesting.
Yeah, the El Amo.
You have a very bad connection now.
I think you are frozen now. We have no connection at this, as it seems, at this looks.
Drink some whiskey, you are frozen. Oh, we don't hear you think anymore.
Something don't work.
Yes, the transmission is not very, very good now. Hello?
Yeah. Ruth is our systems engineer here. And she's getting going.
Oh, hello. At least we see a pretty face.
At least one.
Oh, she hates me already. Oh, look at this.
Be careful, because Armin is a womanizer like Tinkies.
Yeah, he influenced me instantly. I know him since half an hour, and now he's just...
I don't know. It won't.
He's my role model.
It's frozen here too. So all I can do is leave and come back.
Okay, it's frozen. Our screen is frozen.
Okay.
So all we can do is leave and come back.
Okay, we wait for you.
Okay, we wait.
Thank you, Ruth.
You're welcome.
No, we can hear you, but we can't. Yeah, now he's back. Now you're gone again. Ruth was simply too beautiful for the camera. Camera gave up. No, it's back. Thank you very much, Ruth. You're the
Thank
best.
Thank you.
Welcome.
So, you talk about the El Amo.
El Amo, yeah.
I don't know how much you all know, but they got orders to stand down and to vacate the El Amo. And nobody wanted to do it. And 32 men came from the town of Gonzales, and they faced certain death because they knew that the Alamo could not be resupplied with troops. Yeah. And the 32 men from Gonzales, they all got killed.
And also from Tennessee and somewhere, there were some folks from...
If next time you come to Texas, go see the Alamo. It has flags of all the countries that the people came from. And there's lots of German flags in there.
Okay.
Yep.
A lot of the people came from Tennessee. Most of my people, I thought came from Tennessee, but I found out came from Virginia. And they didn't fight the Battle of the Alamo, but they fought the Battle of San Jacinto. And there were two Mexican generals, Santa Ana, that everybody knows about.
Yep.
But there was a general by the name of Juan Alamante. And Alamante was captured along with Santa Ana. And the Sam Houston thought he could make some political hay with him. And they signed over the state of Texas to, you know, and they were... It was free of Mexico. And my third great grandfather was named Calvin Boyles. And he was second in command at San Jacinto, where we beat the Mexicans.
Okay.
And General Santa Anna got on his knees and he gave his sword to Sam Houston. And Juan Alamante got on his knees and gave the sword to my third great-grandfather.
Wow.
He died in 1850. We don't know where he's buried. And he's not in the state cemetery.
mm-hmm. which wouldn't start till 1852.
Mm-hmm.
And so all I know is that my forefathers fought for Texas freedom.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a great story.
Nice.
And what you, if you study on Texas, you'll find that there was a second war with Mexico, and Juan Alamante called himself dictator of Mexico and declared war on Texas. And he would raid and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, they had over 200 Texans as prisoners, POWs, in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
They had them for 2 years. And they didn't hardly feed them. A lot of them died.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mexicans. And so after about 2 years, they approached the Rio Grande, and the Mexicans told them the Vamoose to go.
Mm-hmm.
And they missed. And that's not widely known. Mm-hmm. Most people here in Texas don't know about mm-hmm. the Second World War.
You know, I'm a lot in history, and so Armin has to understand the Texans are different people because yeah. they fought against the Mexicans,
mm-hmm.
they fought against the Comanche,
yeah.
they fought against each other Nothing. Sometimes,
yeah.
and so they are different people.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure. And
Texas was the only country. It was an established country to join the Union of the United States.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, they were an independent state of yeah. Texas, and then they joined the Union.
It wasn't a state, it was a country.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And in London, there is a ceramic painting that says an embassy of Texas,
mm-hmm.
and it's yeah. standing.
Nice.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And what's also true, because I'm also into weapons and guns and so. And, you know, when Sam Colt invented the revolving pistol, the revolver,
mm-hmm.
he wasn't successful mm-hmm. until, I think it was a kind of captain or so of the Texas Ranger. It was Colonel Patterson who said, we need these guns for our Texas Rangers, but we have to modify this, and then came out the Colt Patterson,
mm-hmm.
and every right. Texas Ranger had to have two of these new revolving pistols, revolvers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read a lot about that. The Rangers said, what the hell we need these pistols for? We got swords, you know? And are you hearing me?
No,
not bad.
Very bad.
Well, anyway,
it works.
If you come to see me, the Texas,
I think
Rangers
stay close. It's better. The connection yeah. is better when you're close to us.
Okay, I get close to you. You told me one time I was too close to you.
If Ruth is close, not
yes,
Ruth.
I said about Ruth.
Okay, near my house, about 3 miles. It's a place called Bandera Pass.
Mm-hmm.
And the Texas Rangers had just been issued their pistols.
Mm-hmm.
And the pass was like this. And they got ambushed by Comanches, Apaches, outlaws, Spaniards, all kind of outlaws. And so as Captain Sam Hayes, who had a company of Texas Rangers, he saw an Indian's horse tied up in the woods. And he says, dismount, men. We can take them. You know we can. And so his men dismounted. And they did not ride into the trap.
Mm-hmm.
And they fought the Indians all day long.
Wow.
And it was the worst fight that the Texas Rangers had ever been in. They had five men wounded, five men killed.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And at the end of the day, the Indians withdrew, and they took all they did with them. And they never found out where the five Rangers were.
Mm-hmm.
And doing research on a ranch just a couple miles from here, and he found graves covered in stone
mm-hmm.
with cedar out of them. And he asked a Mexican, he said, yeah, there's some old army guys buried here, you know. So he found a location, and they're making it into a cemetery mm-hmm. so that the land isn't developed into a housing development or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the army, U.S. Army, had not adopted the Colt pistol.
Yeah, just the Texas Rangers. Yeah.
Right. So if you ever get to see a Colt black powder pistol on the cylinder, it's thinking of cowboys and Indians.
Okay. Yep.
And what happened was that after they heard about this battle and how good the pistols performed, that they finally got them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And there was a captain by the name of Walker.
Yeah.
And the Walker Colt is named after him.
Whitney Will Walker or so, no?
Not the TV show, no.
Okay.
This was a ranger way back in the old days. The president of the United States asked the ranger to escort the U.S. Army through Mexico, through Texas, mm-hmm. to protect the Indians and the Mexicans.
Mm-hmm.
And so the rangers provided an escort to the border. And then they went on and they fought the Battle of Montezuma and the other things. Well, Colonel Walker got his Colt pistol. Finally, he got his own pistol during the battle. And 4 days after he got his pistol, he was killed.
Mm. Okay.
And you know, I mean, these were big, like, saddle pistols. They were mm-hmm. not to carry on the back. These were big coils.
Yeah, they weighed 4.5 pounds.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Think there's another story I love, and maybe you can tell it better. There was one event. There was a kind of riot, I think, in Houston or where. And the mayor of Houston, I think it was Houston, called for the Texas Rangers to help against the riot. And he waited on the airport. The mayor of the city waited on the airport for the Texas Rangers to arrive to help against the riots.
Hmm.
And out. Okay, go on.
Yeah. It was on the coast of Texas. And they didn't. But he asked for rangers to help put down a riot. And they said one, and the mayor said, why? He says, one ranger, one riot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You wow. got it? One ranger arrived, mm-hmm. and the mayor said, what about one ranger? And
he said, ranger,
one ranger, yeah. one riot. One riot, one ranger.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah, yeah. Tough guys. Yeah.
But these Texans are different guys. That's what I want to tell them with the stories.
Nice. Did you ever met Ted Nugent, this musician?
Yeah. I taught Ted everything he knows about archery.
Oh, okay. So you know him well. What do you think of him?
I got him shooting all night or both. And,
okay.
We're friends, but... he's not held in the high esteem that he used to be.
Mm.
And he's had a hip replacement. And he's almost as I am. And he's slowing down a lot now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a promotion work for gun rights and everything.
Mm-hmm. He was, shortly ago, he was on Joe Rogan's show. I saw him talking mm-hmm. with Joe Rogan. You know the Joe Rogan show? Think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Joe Rogan hunts with the same guy I hunt with up in Canada. His name is
He's a bow hunter Riff. Too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And Joe Rogan moved to Texas.
Yeah, to Austin. Yeah. Because the Californians are too stupid and crazy, and there was a total lockdown and so for about 1.5 years in California, and Joe Rogan moved to Texas.
Mm, makes sense.
Yeah. And you know, I told it to Armin. how is it called? Let me see. Just a moment.
I think we need to move to Texas too, because here in Europe, everything goes crazy too.
You know,
I'm
Texas. No, Spotify. Joe Rogan moved from YouTube to Spotify.
Yeah.
And the official sum is $100 million they gave him for moving from YouTube to Spotify. Yeah. So Joe Rogan is a big number. Mm-hmm. He has more auditory than all the United States cable networks together.
Mm-hmm.
Great guy.
Yeah, and I was 1 week hunting with him up in Canada, and Alberta was shot 3 or 4 bears, John, and I've never hit the weekend that Joe Rogan is there.
Mm-hmm.
But,
he's Rogan's a nice guy. And my other favorite Texan is Alex Jones. He also lives in Austin, no? Alex Jones, you know him? He's a kind of he's a kind of conspiracy guy. He ran that InfoWars website. Mm-hmm. He did a lot, very successful.
Yeah.
He also lives in Austin.
Yeah. My favorite Texan is now Tink, and my second favorite Texan died already. It's Stevie Ray Vaughan, in my opinion, the best rock musician ever on this planet.
Well, Ted used to date my daughter.
Oh.
And I almost had Ted as a son-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably would kill him by now.
Nice. Hey, people.
You know everybody. But, it seems you know everybody.
Yeah, small community, yeah. I made a video one time with up in Michigan. It cost me $38,000. Just as I was getting to Africa, and he would not sign for me to release the video, so the video was necessary. And I don't know what his reason was, but we had a wonderful video. We shot archery, had cooking, had in the kitchen, and everything. He didn't want to sign a release so that I could sell the video.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And One more thing, Tink, you have to tell us, you also founded that Tink company who was producing or is still producing lure and so for
hunting. That's really why I'm famous, not that I'm a bow hunter, but that almost 50 years ago, I got some urine from a doe deer and... this is the product that I make.
Yeah.
It's Tink's 69 Doe and Rot Buckler.
Mm-hmm.
And it is actually, honest to God, estrus urine from a doe deer.
Mm-hmm.
We have farms where deer are kept in cages, take a temperature, and they know when they go estrus. And we collect their urine, and they call it Germany. I think it's Lochmittel. Is that the name?
Again,
Lochmittel.
Yeah, Lochmittel. Yeah,
Lochmittel. Yeah, Lochmittel.
Yeah. Think,
and
you have to send one bottle of it over to Armin because he loves to smell pussies.
Okay, and
we
have a whole line of scents,
mm-hmm.
and that's become my multi-million-dollar business.
Wow!
And the headquarters are in Covington, Georgia, and I've been there a few times, and decided they don't need me anymore. All they do is send me money, so that's fine. Right.
That's could fine, be worse, you know.
and to be true. You represent them at various shows. At least you did in the past.
Because of COVID, we didn't have an archery show. We didn't have a shot show this year. We should have next year, and I'll be there.
Yep. Nice.
And you know, I have to say, I always say to Armin, the best experiences in my little archery life I had with the American people, because it was Byron Ferguson who invented me to hunt with him in Tennessee, and then we drove down or up to Indianapolis to the ATA show, where I met Tink and got him to know, and we talked a little and so on. So these Americans, you know, there's a lot of American hate, America haters in Germany, and in Austria not so, but in Germany there are a lot, and they don't know the American people. They don't know them. They don't know them. Because they are nice.
Well, I think I told you yesterday, my father was one of the guys that developed the Berlin Airlift. And when the Russians cut off the German people in Berlin, the Americans,
the wall,
and the British flew food in, and they dropped.
Yeah.
And they even had boxes of toys for kids. They actually had toys for the kids to play
and,
with.
And candy and stuff, I know. And sometimes it seems the German have forgotten this. That the Americans made it air bridge and supplied them with every kind of goods and as you said, toys and everything.
Well, you know, now you can go into what is East Germany. It's nothing like West Germany, you know.
No.
It's sterile. The buildings are old. There's not much going on. Yeah. And you had the same people on two sides of the Iron Curtain.
Yeah.
And the people to the south, they prospered, and the Germans were very healthy, modern people that with big motor cars and everything. And the people on the other side were relics, you know, they were they had nothing, you know.
But now they are evolving back. So now the Western Germans are like the Eastern Germans. Like Angela Merkel is like a communist. She was from Eastern Germany, and now she's chancellor. It's horrible.
Yeah, and what happened after the wall came down, we in West Germany had to pay for the build-up in East Germany. Of course, they have now all the new technology, everything new. So in early days, it was a quality sign made in West Germany. And now it's not anymore, because in West Germany, it's only old industry. And in the East, they built everything new technology, everything there.
But Armin, there are landscapes in Eastern Germany, you know, you wouldn't love to be there. It's
of
like,
course not. It's
like in the Soviet Union still.
You can't change things. It takes a few more generations, I guess.
You know what I don't understand? Mm. There are still Germans around, even Eastern Germans, who are thinking positively about the regime, about the communists.
Of course.
They miss the communists. It's horrible. So
they need to go to Cuba for a week.
Yeah. They have a big trouble now in Cuba too, no? But you don't hear a lot about it.
The people are starving and they don't. I subscribed to a Soviet thing, and they said they sent two plane loads of medical care to Cuba.
And you because you used to live in South Africa, there's, you don't hear a lot about in the mainstream media. At the moment, there's a lot of looting and violence and riots in South Africa. It's horrible. This moment.
In Cuba, they had to bring in troops to fire on Cubans because the Cubans would not fire on their own people. Bring in foreign troops, Venezuelans.
You know what, Tink? Here around, the young guys walk around with T-shirts with Che Guevara on it.
I have no idea what it is.
And they're usually gay, and Che would kill the gay people.
He would shoot
all the gays.
It's so stupid.
Young people don't don't know, or they have shirts of Mayo Tsung or something like that on that, you know. Mm. They think that's cool to be rebellion. But they wouldn't last a week in Cuba.
Yeah.
Or in Venezuela.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's horrible. It's horrible. Yeah.
Times.
So.
Great.
What about Rich joining us in some weeks? Mr. Tink.
Well, now that I know how to do it, it's very possible. Okay, I want to ask one thing. Who watches your podcast?
Archers most, of all ranges. So every kind of archery interested people.
And we always try to get people from different nations, from different places as guests, so we can talk about everything around the world. Last week we had a Chinese guy who lives in China and told us about archery in China and how, and you know what, we reversed business. He is importing American Howard Hill archery bows to China.
Interesting. That's funny.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. And Armin has a lot of viewers. I don't have a lot, but we are still going on and we will do it.
Well, y'all should advertise your podcast on American Facebook.
Yeah.
And people don't know how to find you all.
Mm-hmm. When we are publishing this issue, then we send you the link so you can share it and your folks can see it too. And you also can have the date and publish it yourself on Facebook or where you like it.
Okay, sounds good.
Yep.
Great.
Yep.
We can do that.
Yeah, you can upload it.
I thought you guys were going to ask me some hard questions.
Wow. Next time, Tink.
We are polite.
Our channel is mainly to promote archery in every aspect. And for my idea is always unite the archers, because there is so much fighting going on between longbow archers and recurve archers, Olympic archers and compound archers. You know, all these, they all differentiate, and we are the best, or the other ones are the best. Exactly. We need a lure for every one of them. Exactly. We put it in a plane and we spray it like the chemtrails.
Like the chemtrails, yeah. Think. Let me know what would be a hard question for you.
Thus,
what would be a hard question for you?
I hadn't thought about it. I just thought you'd be talking about heavy arrows and FOC weight and stuff like that.
Yes, we can do.
I never dealt with FOC. I just used heavy arrows because they worked better, and I killed a bunch of animals. Mm-hmm. And most of my game, I used a 22 and 19.
I was
22 and 19. The printer is going.
Yep.
22 and 19.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a heavy hunting arrow with a broadhead weighs 125 grains.
Mm-hmm.
The insert weighs maybe 10 or 15 grains.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've shot through most of the animals I've shot. I've had complete penetration through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and think.
I've shot two antelope with one arrow, and I've shot two deer with one arrow.
Wow.
Nice.
Think maybe next issue we just talk about what's important with arrows and what's important in bow hunting and archery and so on. Maybe we can make it.
You must have arrows. It's very important to have arrows.
Yeah.
No, of course. Without arrows, the best bow doesn't work without arrows. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you're out of arrows, you're out of business, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I often wonder about these guys that, like Fred Bear, the one hunting, had only carried three arrows in their bow quiver. Mm. They were pretty, you know, they weren't going to miss, you know. But one time I shot a deer on the eighth arrow that I shot at him.
Mm-hmm.
He was standing in a field in Pennsylvania. and you might be 60 or 70 yards away. And you watch the arrow fly over, and I finally shot him right between the eyes, and he went down.
Nice.
Ah, that's nice.
I'd like to do it again. I'd like to be invited to your show next time.
We really would appreciate, if you join us again, because you're full of stories and knowledge and all, also that history. You know, I'm always interested in history, and especially in Texan or Wild West history.
Well, when you all come to Texas, I'll show you around.
Cool.
And I'll show you, okay?
Maybe we can travel again, yeah.
Yeah, at least once, and then we directly stay there, because I don't want to come back to Europe. Europe is so crazy right now. It's
you're exile on an island. Nobody wants you.
You know, you're the only really free country in the world, right? Because your constitution protects you. Our constitution is bent in every directions, and
protects the government.
You have freedom of speech, but you don't know if you have freedom after speech. Like,
we don't have freedom on Facebook, though. Trump is suing Facebook, and they will have, like, I'm in a 26-day Facebook jail because somebody was passing secrets to Iraq, and the government caught him.
Ooh,
and they're prosecuting him. He's going to get 15 to 18 years. And underneath it, I said, hang him. So I got a 30-day ban.
Nice.
And hanging is what you do with treason. He's hung. It was more honorable to be shot at than to be hung. Hanging was a mess. Squads were pretty good.
You noted that it was a television show I watched shortly ago. It was about Texas. It is called The Sun, like your son, you know, The Sun, with Pierce Brosnan. And it was all about Texas and the Texas oil rush and so on. Very nice series.
Right. And they tried to palm off a fake arrowhead on him that was Sabrina Parker. And he looked at it and said, we don't have this shirt in Texas, you know? The rifle he carried was a Remington 1907.
Yeah.
It was the first semi-automatic rifle.
And he was very modern with his guns and so on.
Yeah. And he had little pouches to put
The magazines I love this series. He grew up with the Comanche, you know, they kidnapped him when he was a boy and grew up with the Comanches, Pierce Brosnan in this show. And he was a real, and there this Texan spirit came out, because he used to behave like he protect his family and his land, like he learned with the Comanches. And in the modern days, he was a kind of monster, of course, because he just...
The Comanches kidnapped a number of white boys and kept them there as captives. And when the government caught the white boys, they didn't want to go back to the white man's way of life. They preferred the Indian way of life, you know?
In that serial, Pierce Brosnan also just went back to the whites, to the soldiers, to the army, because he liked to protect the tribe, because they gave some supplies and stuff to the Comanches because they starved. So he said, okay, then I go back when you give this stuff to my people. A very good serial. You have to watch it. I mean, really good.
I will watch it one day.
I've seen it. We talked about this yesterday with the wooden recording. That the Germans settle here, they settle in Castroville and Fredericksburg, and the streets are named Hauptstrasse and everything like that. They didn't have much trouble with the Indians because they traded with the Indians. And they gave, you know, food and everything. And they got along really good. and the Germans, they minded their own business.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They weren't out to cause trouble and so forth. And they didn't have Indian troubles, okay? Mm-hmm. It was all the other people that came here that had Indian troubles.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
I also love these songs. The Eyes of Texas Are Upon You and The Yellow Rose of Texas. These are my songs.
Okay. There's a historical series called Texas Rising. And you find it. The Yellow Rose of Texas was, she was Negro, but she was very, very light, and they call it, and she was the one that snuck in at San Jacinto. She had made love to San Allen was sleeping in his hammock. Mm-hmm. And that's when she, because they knew she was a Cartesian, she could pass freely through the lines. She went back and told him Santa Ana was passed out. Mm-hmm. And probably, and the Battle of San Jacinto only lasted 15, 18 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a job on him. There's a thing, they made a series, it's not 100% correct.
Mm-hmm.
Called Texas Rising, if you ever get to see that.
I have to see it. I have to write it. Texas mm-hmm. Rising.
Mm-hmm.
It was done. I mean, they had mountains where there's no mountains. And I think they found Mexico or something.
Yes, but, you know, I also see often in some series some mistakes or some stuff, but it depends if the story is good.
Mm-hmm.
To me, yeah. If it's a good story, it doesn't matter if the gun is not right or something like that.
Yeah. I like details. You know, I was working on a film set once when they did the Stuff Keepers, this book movie, and then there was a romance against these Jews. They were in this last fortress in Masada.
Masada, yeah.
And it was horrible. I was always, because I was the archery instructor there and was teaching the people and the actors how to shoot with bow and arrow. And then they let the Roman soldiers, they had this red rope, this red coat, and over it they had a back quiver because they run around with bow and arrow. I said, look, they never had this. It's not going to work like this. It's historically wrong. And then the guy said, yeah, but this is how this Jewish survivor was seeing it, so it doesn't have to be correct. And they're there, what the heck? He said, well, it was fun. Yeah. That's why I like it when the details, because then you see the quality of a serial or a movie when the detail is really matched.
I love that guns at that the Sun show with Pierce Brosnan. He had a nice Colt government, a nice 1911 45 pistol,
classic,
and pouches for spare magazines. Mm-hmm. And you know, his gun rig was matching his boots.
Mm-hmm, of course.
Of course, very stylish. Nice.
Fine.
Yeah, on the first of September
mm-hmm.
in Texas, anybody that's not a criminal will be able to carry open carry.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be able to open it. No papers, no investigation.
Wow.
You just can't be have a felony.
You know, when Joe Rogan moved to Austin. And he had this new studio, and he has invented a kind of Marines guy, an army guy from the Marines, a Navy guy, and they said in the studio, and this army guy, this Navy guy said, so Joe, now you're in Texas. I brought you a gift, and he gave him a packet, and he opened it, and in was a nice pistol. Because here in Texas, here is open carry. You need a pistol to carry around. So now you're in Texas, you have a gun.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you have a concealed license, you can carry openly. But after September, everybody in Texas will be able to carry open, and it will go down.
Mm-hmm.
Like they did that last year in Oklahoma. And they said the streets would run red with blood and everything. Crime rate went down.
No. You know what? The opposite is true. If you ever hunted, if you ever handled a lot of guns and so on, you know what you can do with a gun. So you're more cautious and more on the safe side than every other person, of course. Because if you have seen once what a bullet does to an animal, you can imagine what you can do to people. And so you're, nobody will, I'm sure Tink will confirm this, nobody would pull out the gun because, you know, in Germany and Austria, they say, these Americans are all crazy with their guns and so on. But there's a side of gang violence, of gang shootings. There are close to no shootings in the United States.
Yeah. Tell me about the American flag over your head.
You know what? When I arrived in Hamilton, Tennessee, when Byron Ferguson invited me, we went to a kind of Walmart or so. I needed to buy a pair of boots and house shoes, you know, kind of moccasins. And there was a department, they had these flags. And I said to Byron Ferguson, Byron, I think I need to buy one of these flags for a souvenir, for memory, for remembering. And he said, that's a pretty good idea. I will buy it for you. and then I said, Mike Goodman, and he has to sign the flag. And since then, I have this American flag because I'm a big fan of America.
Mm-hmm. There you go. That's good. Yeah, Byron Ferguson, long time before he got into trick shooting, inserts for me. And I made a shaft that was 5/16 fiberglass, and it had compressed cedar. Remember the forge wood cedars? So what we did is we put the compressed cedar inside that.
Wow.
Yeah, which made a very heavy arrow. And then an insert about that long.
Mm-hmm.
So that Brian Ferguson gave me all the inserts that I have. And we call the arrow Tink's Penetrator. It weighed 700 and 800 grains. And what I used for a lot of stuff and never let me down.
It was,
but nothing stopped it. You know, I think you shoot through it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Byron is a very nice guy. You know, we came in contact because I wrote this book. I think I gave one to you, if I remember well, this Legends in Archery book. And I wrote one chapter because I wanted to have one living legend inside this book. And so I contacted Byron Ferguson, asked him if he can tell me something about him and so on. And after that, I bought the copyrights for the German edition of his Become the Arrow book.
Mm-hmm.
And then our guy invited Byron to a show in Austria, to making a show in Austria. And then there we met the first time. And so he just knew I'm that Austrian guy who bought his book copyrights here over. And he flew back. I was able to watch some movie work because a German television station made a kind of documentary about Robin Hood shoots, and Byron did it on television. And I was able to be there 2 days and watch this movie work and so on. And he flew home to Alabama. And 1 week after, he sent me an email, Peter, I'd like to invite you to Tennessee for bow hunting. And I watched out the Goodman Ranch. I said, okay, 1 day is $2,000. And I said, no, I wrote back, no, Byron, that's too expensive. I can't afford that.
Mm.
And he said, no, you got me wrong. I have a property there, and you can stay in my trailer. You can sleep in my trailer, and we can hunt his own property. And so then I thought, oh, you would be a crazy guy if you wouldn't do this.
Mm.
And I flew over, and he was so nice. She was, and also the Mike Goodman, he has a hunting ranch there in Tennessee. And he said, you like to sleep in the trailer of Byron? I said, yes. You know, he's snorting. You can't sleep whole night long because he's snorting. And he said to hear the a ranch hand there and said, one room for Mr. Peter. And I, oh, if I have to pay this, it's horrible. And then after 5 days, I said, I like to pay the stay and so on. And the meal, he supplied us with breakfast and meal and every night at dinner and so on. I said, no problem. You're Byron's friend, so it's no problem. Come on, let's go together to Indianapolis to the ATA show. And so, and that was the story when I met Also think so. It's great. Some kind of.
I have something. Have you noticed the wild boar I have above my head?
Mm-hmm. I see. Yeah, nice tusks. Okay.
That is a purebred German wild boar.
A German.
It's not a feral hog. Mm-hmm. The Germans imported them because originally they didn't have many deer in Texas. They wanted something to hunt. So they put the purebred, and the purebred has bristles that split mm-hmm. on the end, yeah. And they use paintbrushes. It contains more paint and everything. And the pigs got loose, and they mixed with the feral hogs that the Spanish bought mm-hmm. in 1500. And so what they would do, the Germans, they would go out and set traps, and the feral hogs, they would castrate them so they wouldn't breed. Mm-hmm. So we have a population, we have both, but we've shot several purebred Russian hogs on my ranch here. Mm-hmm. And that, believe it or not, is a sow.
That looks nice. Wow.
Nice.
Wow. And you hunted this with an arrow or with a rifle?
No, the backyard was with a rifle. They were in my corn feeders. I eat my deer corn, so I popped them with the. I've shot so many hogs and everything. I don't mean to sound conceited, but I've lost count, you know. Mm-hmm.
We also have a lot of wild boar here around in Austria, where I am, and also in Germany, we have lots of wild boar.
You know, I remember my dad taking me out for a hunt. Where they had killed some red deer, some hirsch, and this fella had a .22, and he was stalking a crow out in the field, mm-hmm. and a wild boar came out. My dad hit him with a shotgun, mm-hmm. bam, bam, didn't do any good, and I shot him with a BB gun. It didn't do any good, so
nice try.
I have to show you. This was my heaviest wild boar. It was 100. It was 140 kilo, 280 pounds.
Mm-hmm. It's a big one.
It's a big one. Yes, I used an Australian longbow, hill style, and a heavy grizzly arrowhead, 190 grain. Mm-hmm. It was a nice one. You see,
when you said grizzly, I was thinking something else. I do know the grizzly broadhead. I've used them before.
The single beaver, that red, I think they were like rust red, like painted red.
Yeah. I think they had different colors for different whites.
Yeah. There were 160 grain and 125 grain and 190 grain. And of course,
when they first came out, they had some that were serrated with the teeth in them. And they didn't go over it. You need a smooth shaving. It's like a...
Doesn't make sense. Yeah. You need the force for a serration and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Mm. Looks fancy, but it doesn't help.
Mm. I don't know. I don't like serrated heads and I don't like...
No, I don't either.
I think that the single-bladed broadhead is the best. Of course, if you're shooting from a deer stand for whitetail, maybe this three-bladed snuffers, or I don't know how they call it, they are making a nice blood trail.
When you have a single blade, is then the nock perpendicular to it, or is it in line, or doesn't matter?
Like you like it. I like it really like that, but some like it like that.
Yeah, they did a lot of testing on it and found there was no difference in accuracy whether it was lined up or not.
Yep.
And
I like them like that because then I can feel them on my index finger the full draw. But that's just my preference.
Nice. I heard once a story that the Native Americans that you could could see is it a war arrow or it's a hunting arrow?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a hunting arrow when the nock and the tip aligns because you shoot through the rib cage in this direction, and if it's a war arrow, the tip is like this.
Yeah. It's a nice story the Indians told the scientists.
Because an arrow never rotates or something.
No.
Totally straight. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Indians had some pretty powerful bows out in Nebraska or something. Two boys, there was an army fort, and they were jumped by Indians. And they two boys jumped on the horse, and they were riding it, and the Indian shot them.
Okay.
And the arrow went the boy in the back and came out the front and stuck in the saddle horn.
Wow. Ooh.
Okay.
Wow.
He got two for one.
Mm-hmm.
And Indians were very fast. They could shoot. They could have 9 arrows in the air by the time the first one hit. Mm-hmm. And it was like artillery fire, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Where it hit.
If you compare with the first, or even with the U.S., the early U.S. cavalry and so on, they had single loading rifles. So the Indians were quite faster with firing with bow and arrow than the single shot rifles, you know, even if they are breech loaders.
Yeah, the Battle of Little Bighorn.
Yeah.
Well, they had 40 different rifles that were used. They have found 40 different cartridges in the area. But the Indians had better guns than the white people did.
Yeah, they had lever action guns, and the army, the cavalry had single shot rifles.
Yeah, like the army would had muskets. They wouldn't adopt the gun until they had the battle of up here of a Bandera Pass. And that's why you can look at a new Colt, a black powder, and on the cylinder engraved with cowboys and Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that made the U.S. Army get on. And they called it the Walker coat. It was about that long. It was a huge, weighed 4.5 pounds.
Yeah,
but they had to be strong. They loaded up with black powder, and everything. But the original Patterson Colt only had 5 rounds, and it didn't have a trigger guard.
Mm-hmm.
And
the trigger just came out and at the bottom.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and the
trigger was inside. Just when you cocked the hammer, the trigger came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they got broken and.
Yeah.
Because there's no trigger guard. And that's Patterson.
Yeah.
Patterson Colt. And it was 5 shot.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Cool. So many stories. We need to invite.
I know a little bit about guns too, you know.
Oh, really?
I know about knives.
That's hilarious.
I know a little bit about bow hunting, you know.
Didn't expect that now from you.
I know a little bit about Texas history. You know?
Okay. Well, yeah. Such a lot of history. Yeah, we really need to invite you again because it's now almost 2 hours, so we need to come to an end for today.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting. We could talk the whole night, or for you the whole day, because it's so interesting.
Well, when you come to Texas to visit me, just stay at my house and we'll hunt deer in the backyard.
Okay? Wow. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I guess Ruth has cooked you some nice lunch, no?
It's not lunchtime yet.
Not lunchtime yet.
But yes, she does.
Mm.
Ruth keeps my office going.
So what is the most favorite or most traditional Texan food?
I'd have to say Mexican food.
Yeah.
Mm.
Like chili and tacos and so on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Enchiladas and stuff like that, because Mexican food.
Tequilas.
Mexicans from Monterrey, Mexico, they fly to San Antonio to have lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They get real Mexican food, yeah. Mm-hmm. You can't get real good Mexican food in Mexico, but you get Mexican food in Texas.
Texas, yeah. Tex-Mex, yeah, this is always like, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd say the other thing is brisket. The brisket is very popular. It's smoked, mm-hmm. and you can part with your fork, you know. Mm-hmm. And barbecued brisket is very big. And then Texas likes a lot of pork ribs. Mm-hmm. Put pork ribs on. And,
yeah, that's and nice.
Mm-hmm. Pork ribs are more tasty than beef ribs.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep. You know, when I was in Idaho, I hunted with Nate Steen. They always said, in the evening, we make barbecue. I always thought barbecue is like on a grill, you know, you do some pork chops and so on. But they had a Dutch oven, a kind of iron big kettle, and they put in onions and stuff and big chunks of pork or beef. And they poured in, I think, 2 liters of Coca-Cola. Mm. And then and some sour cream and herbs and spices. And then they buried that big iron pot into the
coal, under the fire. They buried it out of the fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we were out hunting 4 hours, 5 hours. And when you come back to camp, everything was ready.
Hot meal for you.
Yeah, they cooked big, in Idaho, they're famous for these big potatoes. Mm-hmm. Some of these big potatoes with sour cream and that kind of stew. It was a kind of mm-hmm. stew. Mm-hmm. We never would call this a barbecue. Sure. Very nice, very nice. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, very nice. So.
Well, I'd like to do it again.
Yes, let's do it
my
again.
My utmost pleasure. It's such an honor to meet you. You're really a legend. Yes, such an honor to talk to you. Thank you so much that you take your time for us.
Thank you. Big honor to us.
We invite you again.
I do it for the sport of archery.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah. And for the brotherhood, for the brotherhood of archers and shooters all around the world. No.
Okay, Wiedersehen.
Thank you very much. See you. Thank you so much, Tink.
Goodbye, Tink. It's a pleasure Goodbye. To meet you. Nice bye-bye. To have you. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Ruth, bye-bye.
Thank you, Ruth. Thank you, Ruth.